Who's Chuck? Who did the Chuck?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thank you. Okay. Please turn to page 35. We're going to read a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. And as I mentioned, this is we'll be doing a little bit of a quiz during the reading. So the younger students or the newer students to the Bhagavad Gita, please answer the earlier questions. Okay? And those who are more experienced students, please answer the later questions. In other words, most of you have more familiarity with the earlier chapters than the later chapters. So, fortunately, Brajahari Prabhu is not here, because he could answer every question I could possibly ask, and then some. So, okay, so well, I'd like to ask everyone to take turns reading. We have microphones handy. Yes, so Ananta, would you like, or Tony, would you like to start reading? Okay, so what we're going to do is read the section on action. That is the first six chapters, 1 through 6. And then we'll skip to the section on devotion. That's chapters, what chapters? 7 to 12, right. And finally, spiritual knowledge, which encompasses chapters 13 through 18. Very good. Okay, so this is a very, very condensed version of the whole conversation, which has appeared in Back to Godhead. We have about 15 minutes per section. So I'm going to ask you as we go along for a few questions relevant to what we've just read. All right? Anyone ready? So,
Arjuna pointed at the thin no man's land separating two massive armies arrayed across a vast flat battlefield. Krishna, drive my chariot there, he commanded. I want to see which followers of that criminal Duryodhana has come here to fight. Krishna obediently steered the golden chariot straight through the corridor. On either side, for miles ahead, countless soldiers cheered, flexed, and seized, ready for battle, taunting their enemies. With a smile and a grand gesture, Krishna said, "Just see, cousin, all the great warriors assembled here." Arjuna gasped at the sight of several generals among his enemies. "Krishna, I can't fight these dear relatives," he cried. "Look at them. How can I kill my teacher, my elders? My whole family will be destroyed. Countless wives will become widows. Think of it. Rogues will seduce them and breed a generation of bastards. Krishna, I'd rather die than fight. I'd rather scrounge for a living than do this." Krishna smiled and stopped the chariot between the two armies. "Why do you degrade yourself, Arjuna? Warriors need strong hearts. Get up and fight." "You're right, Krishna," said Arjuna, "but I respect these men. Should I kill them just because they've chosen the wrong side? Even if I win, their blood would stain my hands. Killing them would ruin my life." Slumping in his seat, Arjuna paused for a moment. Choking back tears, he looked up in bed. "Krishna, what should I do?"
Okay, let's stop there for a moment. Does anyone know this? Well, actually, what chapter are we in now? Chapter 2. Okay, good. Does anyone know this verse? Yes. The translation is fine. That's fine. That's it. Anyone know the Sanskrit phrase? Shishyasteham sadimam tamprapanam. Now I am a disciple and a soul surrendered to you. Please instruct. Good. Okay, please continue. Next. Very loudly into the mic, please. Yeah.
With a grave expression, Krishna replied, "You are agonizing over some doomed flesh. You forget that these men are eternal souls, not short-lived bodies. Your arrows can kill their bodies, Arjuna, but nothing can kill their souls. As a person puts on fresh clothes and drops the used ones, the eternal soul occupies a new body at death. So why get so upset about the old one? Besides, you are a warrior. If you quit, everyone will call you a coward. Imagine this shame. You must fight, but not necessarily for yourself. Dedicate your fight to the Supreme and act as the eternal soul you truly are. Fight off your materialistic concepts. Then you will be a yogi."
Would anyone like to quote a couple of verses from these? Any that you recognize? English or Sanskrit? Nanu so chanti pandita, that a self-realized person does not lament. Does anyone know the verse about clothing? Pardon me? Vasamsi janani yatavihaya. As a person puts on clothes and discards the old ones. Good. All right, notice, and this is in the second chapter we have this transition. First, Krishna begins by giving these basic truths about the body and the soul. Then he starts getting in Arjuna's pride as a warrior. He starts talking about Kshatriya Dharma, so that's the next section we'll read. Who's next to read?
Listening closely, Arjuna asked, "How do yogis act like everyone else except they're detached? While most people slavishly serve their minds and senses, yogis master them. Yogis enjoy an inner freedom and happiness that ordinary people never know." Arjuna looked skeptical. "How can I be happy within and fight at the same time? That's a contradiction." Smiling again, Krishna replied, "Arjuna, just to survive, you have to do something. Instead of sitting idly or acting selfishly, turn your work into a sacrifice for the Supreme. Then you will be happy."
What chapter are we in now? Okay, very good. Please continue.
"What is the power pushing me to act selfishly?" asked Arjuna. "Lust, Arjuna, born of festering desire. Lust clouds your mind. Because lust can never be satisfied, it leaves you frustrated, angry, and disturbed. If you want to be happy, you must fight and conquer every kind of lust."
Very good. Where does this verse appear in the third chapter? Anyone remember? This exchange. Yes, this is right, very end of the third chapter. Very good. Arjuna asks, "What is this compelling me to act?" And anyone remember? Yes, lust, of course, the answer. Anyone remember the Sanskrit for that verse? What's it? Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samud Baba. Right. Lust only. Born of desire. Very good. Okay, please continue.
Krishna paused for a moment so that Arjuna digest these words, and then continued in a kind tone. "For a long time I've been teaching people how to act in yoga and subdue lust. At the dawn of creation I taught the sun god, who taught his son, who in turn started a long chain of teachers. Somehow, though, time has obscured this art. Today, dear friend, I'll teach it again for you."
And what chapter are we in now?
Arjuna raised an eyebrow. "How could you have taught the sun god, who's so much older than you?" "My body is spiritual and never ages or dies," Krishna replied. "From time to time, I appear in this world to help the good people and vanquish those who act out of lust and greed. Good people shed their lust and act out of love for me. good or bad, though, I respond to everyone individually.
Can anyone quote some verses from that section?
Dalidahi dharmasya vanar bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmana dhamma.
Okay, and the next one? Parichanaya sadhunam. Yes, in order to deliver the sadhus and vinashaya traduskritam, to destroy the demons. I descend again and again. Good. Okay, please continue.
For your own good, Arjuna, act for my sake. When you do everything involved, your work, your weaponry, your knowledge, becomes part of a blissful offering for the Supreme. Since there are many ways to turn action into an offering to God, get personal direction from a truly enlightened guru. You'll learn the most sublime sort of knowledge from a genuine guru. Arjuna paused for a moment and asked, you say I should act with detachment and that I should act for you. Which is better?
Which chapter are we in now? Right, this begins chapter 5.
Acting without attachment and acting for me are both forms of yoga. However, by acting for me, you automatically act with detachment. I'm your friend. I own everything. All action is meant for me. Just knowing this brings you endless peace and allows you to act in perfect yoga or union with me. The art of yoga and meditation allows you to work without detachment.
Okay, anyone quote the verse we just read, paraphrased? Shruti Sagar? Loudly, please. Loudly. Suri. Tatvamam Shantim Richati. Okay, that's 5 what? Anyone know the verse number? 28, 29. Last verse. Anyway, of the 5th chapter, whatever. Okay? So now we're transitioning into the 6th chapter.
Arjuna wins. Meditation, it's easier to stop the wind than to make my mind sit still. Yes, it's hard, but it is possible with constant practice and detachment. But what if I try and fail? Then I'm a loser materially and spiritually. If you do the right thing, how can you lose? At least you'll be better off in your next life. Rather than meditation, though, if you simply serve me with loving devotion, at death you'll leave this painful world and come to me.
Anyone quote that verse? End of the 6th chapter. It's paraphrased, yes. Yoginam? Very good. Okay, so now let's turn over to next page, chapter 38, second section on devotion. Bhagavad Gita is like a sandwich. It's like the type of sandwich that you're eating is determined not by the bread on either side, but by the contents in the middle. So the Bhagavad Gita is really about devotion. And it has the karma on one side and the jnana on the other side. But bhakti is in the middle. It is a bhakti sandwich. The only kind you can eat on a kadas.
Krishna continued, listen, Arjuna. You are one of the rare souls who seek the highest truth. There is no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. Four kinds of people turn to me, the curious, the desperate, the sad, and the wise. Four other kinds of people ignore me, the materialistic, the dull-headed, the arrogant, and armchair scholars. Some overly clever men think I'm just a mouthpiece for Brahma, the formless spirit. They never get to know me personally. However, the true wise who simply serve me come to me when they die. Arjuna, intrigued, blurted out a series of questions.
Okay, let's stop for a moment. What chapter begins with those questions of Arjuna? Yes, chapter 8. In this chapter 7, Arjuna doesn't speak. Krishna just gives this knowledge. What is the name of chapter 7? Anyone remember? Knowledge of the Absolute. Right. So Krishna is here explaining himself. So let's just pause for a moment. Let's look at Arjuna's emotional path in the Bhagavad Gita. He begins with great confidence. Senayoru Bayor Madhye, God, drive my chariot between the armies. And then he completely melts down. How can I fight? So from elation to depression, just instantly. And then there is weakness, and then finally submissiveness, and then inquisitiveness. He's asking questions in chapter 3. And then there's skepticism. Chapter 4, he says, wait a minute. You say you taught this yoga to the sun god, Vivaswan, but he's so much older than you. How could you have done this? Like a lawyer in court. Mr. Smith, where were you on the night of the 27th? So he's challenging. So this indicates, you know, these are very human feelings Arjuna is expressing. Great variety. So then at that point, Krishna reveals his divinity. Not until Arjuna asks that skeptical question does Krishna really say he's God. But he says, Ajopi son of Yayatma Bhutanam, Ishwaropi son. I have been through many, many lives, although my body is unborn and never deteriorates. So these verses at the beginning of chapter 4 are very important for that reason. That's where Krishna finally says to him, okay, you're dealing with the Supreme here. And as in all of these great devotees that we've been reading about, Kunti, Devi, and Bhishma, Arjuna's rasa with Krishna fluctuates. He comes in and out of the position of transcendental knowledge to his rasa, his relationship. And he doesn't stay really fixed in one or the other. We really see a lot of this in Arjuna. So he's asking, we'll see it in this section. So he's asked Krishna about his divinity, and then he asks him, and again he challenges him at the beginning of chapter 5. You say I should work for you and that at the same time I should be detached. How can I reconcile this contradiction? These are very challenging questions, not asked rudely, but definitely provocative. Definitely not, okay, Krishna, just whatever you say. He's asking relevant, penetrating questions. So then Krishna explains karma yoga further in chapter 5, and then he introduces meditation in chapter 6, and Arjuna says, oh, wait a minute, I can't do that. I'd rather try to control the wind, you know. So this is an expression of doubt, frustration, of exasperation. So many nice emotions. So then Krishna gives him this very human kind of reassurance. You know, you can't lose. Even if you fall down, in your next life you'll be benefited. Those who do good are never overcome by evil. Then he proceeds to give us all of chapter 7, which we just read, in which he's doing all the talking. And then Arjuna has all of these questions that come just one after the next in chapter 8. So let's take it up there. Any questions or discussion about Arjuna's emotions? We'll follow that thread some more as we continue. Go ahead. Who's next?
Brahman is my spiritual aura, an eternal light. It's like the sunshine, which is a byproduct of the sun. It is neither the sun nor the sun god. What about the gods? I create them to manage this material world. What is the soul? The spark of Brahman, an eternal spiritual individual whom I also create. Why do souls suffer karma? They're made to serve me, but if they prefer to serve themselves, I give them karma so they can try to enjoy material bodies one after the next. Do you remain in the heart of every soul? Yes, we'll discuss that later. How can I know you when I leave this body? Practice thinking of me now, even as you fight. Think of me as both ancient and fresh, as huge and tiny, but always as a person, shining like the sun. Thinking of me brings you all you might achieve from any sort of study, charity, or religion. Arjuna's questions answered for the moment, Krishna spoke on.
Okay. Sorry. Now, which chapter are we going into with this verse? No, this is the first verse of chapter 9, the beginning of chapter 9. Okay. Yeah, question?
Mm-hmm. As I was
Well, that is a linear conception. But at the same time, in other words, from a time point of view, the soul is eternal. As soon as it exists, it's eternal. But at the same time, Krishna existed before the soul. So that's an inconceivable contradiction in our to our minds, which are heavily conditioned by time. Mamaivam so jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. He explains in the 15th chapter.
Is it correct to understand that as a soul we were part of Krishna to begin with, and then eventually we became separate?
Pardon me? Yes, just the Brahman is present when Krishna, with Krishna. So the souls are, individual souls are part of that Brahman. Now, did Krishna exist first? But because he never did not exist, there wasn't a time we can say, well, Krishna was there and the souls weren't. But at the same time, nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitanam, they're totally dependent. Their existence, our existence, is totally dependent on Krishna's existence. So we want, our minds want to just define these things in terms of linear time, but it doesn't fit. At least we can understand easily that there's a dependent relationship. We could not exist without Krishna.
Because you have some faith in me, you can understand me. I create the universe and everything in it, yet I remain an individual, untouched by my creation. Fools see me as an ordinary man, but great souls bow to me and serve me with love. Some people offer fancy gifts to the gods in exchange for material enjoyment. Yet I am pleased with simple, loving offerings of flowers, fruit, or water. Even if you make a mistake, I'll still accept you, for I'm equal to everyone but partial to one who loves me. So be my devotee, Arjuna, and I promise that you'll come to me.
Okay, good. Now we're going to transition into chapter 10, but before we do, anybody know any of these verses from chapter 9 we just read? Patram pushpam plum toyam. That's all right. We're asking the younger students first, but whatever they can't answer, Rajahari, we're counting on you to answer. Okay. Please, go ahead. Just quote the verse, yeah, that you were quoting. In 9:26. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prayachati tanaham bhakti paritam ishnami prayatatmana. If one offers me with love, fruit, flower, water, leaf, I will accept it. By the way, you know those things are sequential. I didn't say them in the right order. A leaf, patram, that's there even in the winter, right? No, I'm sorry, in the spring, there's a leaf. And then pushpam, flower, spring, summer, and then palam is the fruit that comes in the fall. And then when it's all done in the winter, there's still toyam, water. So he's saying, any season, just offer me whatever's around me. And if it's offered with love, I'll accept it. Just one lousy flower. There's a story about a devotee of Kali. So he went to Kali, please give me all these benefits. Please, I need money, I need this. Kali says, all right, bring me one goat. And so he comes back later, no goat. Where's the goat? Oh, they are very, very expensive. He says, all right, well, bring me one rat. So he comes back and says, oh, well, I went, but the marketplace was closed. I couldn't find any. Kali says, well, could you bring me a fly? And the boy says, oh, my lord, there are so many flies buzzing around. Can't you just grab one? So, this is the point. Krishna makes it very, very easy, but he asks that it be offered with love. Okay, so now I go into chapter 10, the four seed verses of Bhagavad Gita.
Here is the essence. I create everything. Always serve and speak about me and you will be happy. For I, sitting in your heart, will destroy your ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Very pleased, Arjuna asked, I love listening to you, Krishna. It seems that only you can truly know yourself. How can I know you? When you see the best anything, the shark among the fish or lion among the beasts, for example, think of me. At the same time, remember, anything wonderful you see in this world is just a spark of my true splendor.
Can anyone quote that verse at the end of the 10th chapter? This whole 10th chapter is called what? Anyone remember the title of the 10th chapter? The Opulence of the Absolute. Very good. And Krishna, Vibhuti Yoga. And Krishna is saying all the things that he is, all the ways to think of him at Arjuna's request. He says, since no one can know you, only you can know yourself, how can I think of you? So then Krishna rattles off all these things. Well, I'm the king among men. I am strength of the strong. I am of secrets. I am silence. What other vibhutis does he mention? What's that? I of sounds, I'm the syllable om. Good. Among women, I am patience, intelligence. Yeah, but we're talking about women. We're talking about women right now. What are the other? Steadfastness and intelligence, not beauty. Intelligence, patience, memory. That was it. Why didn't any of them women remember that? Very good. And then, yes, among the beasts, I'm the lion. What else? Of sacrifices, yes. Good. I'm the ability in man. No, that's another chapter. Of mountains and of immovable things. Yes, that's it. Among thinkers, I'm Bhrigu. Among demons, I'm Prahlad. Very good. Among thinkers, I'm Sukra. Okay. Among demigods, I am Indra. Yeah, not Vam. Yeah, I believe so. Among Adityas, I'm Vishnu. Okay, anything else? Fishes, I'm the shark. Bodies of water, I'm the ocean. I am the sagar. Among rivers, I am the... wielders of weapon, yes, I am Ram. Anyone remember which river Krishna compares himself to? The Ganges, yeah. Okay, very good. So this is chapter 10. And then at the end of chapter 10, he says, Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam. All of this that you see in this world is just but a what? Somebody other than the scholars. Can anyone say? A spark? A spark of my splendor. Right, very good. And then he adds a little bit more after that in the next verse. What is the use of accounting for all of these? Just a tiny fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So just so cosmic. Arjuna says, how can I think of you? Well, this, and this. But these are just a minor part of my splendor. So it's... Where do we find this in any other scripture? There's nothing like this. So nice. Okay, good. So after chapter 10... Let's go on. I won't ask you which chapter comes next. I know you know that.
Krishna, how kind of you to scatter my illusions, cried Arjuna. Then, a bit more timidly, he said, I have one request. If you think I can bear it, please show me that form which you are the universe, in which you are the universe and everything in it.
Okay, here's another just emotional transition for Arjuna. In chapter 10, it's backing up a little bit, what does Arjuna express for the first time? He had all these questions in chapter 8. He hears Krishna speak in chapter 9, saying how easy it is to please him. And then towards the beginning of chapter 10, he has this very ecstatic expression. What is that? What does he say? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Brahma. You are the supreme Brahman. You are the purest. You are the ultimate shelter. He just speaks all of these appreciations of Krishna as God. And then he asks, how can I think of you? So he's come to this, he's become ecstatic hearing these chapters of Bhagavad Gita. All of his questions are answered. He realizes Krishna is God. He's in ecstasy being before him. And then he becomes a little bit greedy. He wants to a little bit more. So he asks that question. Okay, could I see your universal form? So how does Krishna respond?
Immediately Krishna complied, "Yes, Arjuna, you now have divine eyes. Behold my universal form." Though no one else on the battlefield could see what he was seeing, Arjuna stood spellbound. "Krishna, I see huge gods with weapons and jewels. They stand on every planet, dazzling with every magical color. The blazing glory of it all surrounds and blinds me. And yet the gods bow in fear before you. Truly you are everything, Krishna. You see everything with your eyes, the sun and moon." Suddenly Arjuna's voice cracked with terror. "Krishna, now I see you crushing everyone with your sharp teeth, your sharp, terrible teeth. My relatives, my enemies, everyone is rushing into your mouth and being killed. Why are you doing this?" In a grave, unearthly voice, Krishna demanded, "I am time, the death of all. All the warriors surrounding us are already as good as dead, Arjuna. Now fight. Be my weapon and win your fame." Trembling, Arjuna fell to his knees. "Almighty Lord, I bow to you from every side. Everyone should simply praise you, God of gods. But fool that I am, I treated you as a familiar friend. Please forgive me as a father forgives a son or a husband forgives a wife. Please let me see you again as Krishna." Still grave, Krishna said, "My universal form has frightened you, Arjuna. Be calm. Now see my true form, which you hold so dear." Krishna, appearing again in his original form, said, "My dear Arjuna, even if you did every kind of good deed, you would not see me like this. I am as Krishna. Only one blessed with love and devotion can truly see me."
So look at this emotional transition Arjuna goes through. Seeing Krishna, he's curious and he's awestruck, and then he's just scared to death seeing how Krishna is killing everyone. This is what Prabhupada referred to as God's backside. You know, that he's consuming everyone. And Arjuna sees that because this is part of the material world. This is part of the cycle of being here. Everyone he knows is going to die, and he suddenly realizes that, and that Krishna is responsible. This person he was so ecstatic about just a few moments earlier. How would you feel about that? It's like if you marry somebody and you discover the next day that they're really a serial killer. So Arjuna is terrified, and then he's very, how would you characterize his next emotion after this fear? Humble, yeah, but even, what does he express next? Repentance, yes, he's contrite. He's saying, "Oh my God, I was treating you like a friend. I was sitting next to you. I was joking with you. Please forgive me." Sees how his rasa has become out of focus now. See? So what does Krishna do in response? He comes down, he shows his original form, and he says, "How can you see this form of mine that you're seeing now? Only by love and devotion can you see the form that you're seeing." So this is what Krishna wants from Arjuna. He wants to see the universal form. He shows it to him. See, God is so neutral. Whatever our desire is, he just fills it. Even if it's going to scare us. But then he says, "This is really what you want to see, and this is what I want from you." Clayton, what is your question?
I don't understand rasa, but the
it's not a change of rasa. It's that phenomenon of going in and out. You know, from the knowledge that he's gaining and realizing, entering into his familiar relationship with Krishna. You see the difference, the degree of absorption. It goes from the head to the heart. No. Ras is an eternal position, but he's kind of going in and out of it. Remember the prayers of Kunti. She starts off with theoretical knowledge. You descend like an actor on the stage. And then she goes over to her family relationship. Oh, you're the son of my brother, and this. So this quality is there. And Bhishma also, we'll read in the prayers of Bhishma. They have the knowledge, but they have the love in the heart in a certain way. See? So Arjuna found himself in conflict. He was gaining this knowledge of Krishna, but he had this loving relation. So he started apologizing. I'm really sorry I used to treat you in such a friendly way. And how does Krishna respond to that? Does he like it? No, he doesn't like it. He says, look, here I am again, relax. And you're seeing me like this because you have love for me. So you see the point. Yeah. He's shifting in and out. That's the best way I can describe it. Going from the intellectual understanding of Krishna to the emotional relationship with Krishna. Okay. No, his rasa never changes, but he's going in and out of it. You see? So just like Krishna consciousness begins with getting knowledge, getting theoretical knowledge, but it evolves to our rasa. And that, whatever that rasa is fixed. We have that eternal relationship with it, but we don't discover it right away, nor can we artificially act in it. But we can study and see how these great devotees are fixed in their rasa, and then they may shift out of it and then back in, because that's what Krishna really wants. That's the pattern. Krishna always prefers his devotees to be in this loving relationship. And they kind of sometimes go out of it into describing all the theoretical knowledge for our benefit. And then they go right back into it. All these devotees do this. Yashoda, Devaki, Vasudeva. The gopis even. But the gopis do it the least. Because they're less educated. Okay, next.
Composing himself, Arjuna asked, "My Lord, should I contemplate you as Krishna or as Brahman, the infinite formless spirit?" Said Krishna, "Those who meditate on me as Brahman may eventually reach me, but only after much trouble. Those who simply think of me, however, I swiftly rescue from the sea of birth and death." Krishna then gave a generous list of further options. "If you can't always think of me, then hear and chant about me. That's called bhakti, or devotional yoga. If you can't do that, then work for me. If you can't do that, then work for charity, because practical work with detachment will bring you more peace than mere theoretical knowledge. Those who think of me in devotion are called devotees. Due to their wonderful qualities of kindness, tolerance, and determination, they are dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to them. They love me, and I love them."
So what a great way to end this section on bhakti, huh? That's chapter 12. Right. So, move on to chapter 13. Section. No, sorry, the third section, spiritual knowledge. We're skipping the commentary.
Krishna replied, "The body is a field of action for the soul. An ordinary soul gratifies the senses and become deeply attached to the body. A wise soul becomes detached from the material body. Such a person is humble, poised, and truly independent. of the super soul in the heart, I advise everyone, wise or unwise. Each soul can choose between my advice and materialism. Those who choose materialism suffer repeated birth and death in different species. Those who choose me come to see the whole situation, the compassionate super soul, and the plight of the spiritual being attached to dull matter.
Okay, that's the end of chapter 13. Summary. So, next chapter is called what? Chapter 14 is Three Modes of Material Nature. What is chapter 13 called, by the way? Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. Okay, see how these are all very technical subjects. Go ahead.
Let me tell you more about matter. It comes in three varieties or modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. As a seed-giving father, I bring dead matter to life by planting the soul. Then the modes take over. Goodness raises the soul to happiness. Passion drives the soul to intense desire. Ignorance dumps the soul in delusion. These three modes always compete for supremacy, knocking you, the eternal soul, from one material situation to the next. Only when you are free of their control can you taste real happiness. Arjuna asked, how do you rise above the three modes and what happens when you do? To conquer the modes and be free of karma, simply love and serve me in every circumstance. Then, as the modes come and go, you will observe them without loving or hating them. At that point, you will be unshakably calm and treat everyone equally.
Good. Okay, that's the end of chapter 14. Can anyone quote that verse at the end? It was just paraphrased. Mamchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitata brahma bhuyaya kalpate, be fixed in spirituality. Very good. Okay, chapter 15.
Imagine this world, Krishna continued, as a great ancient banyan tree with branches that grow down to become roots and new trunks. A single such tree can expand for acres and no one can figure out where it begins or ends. If you want to escape this entangling tree, you must cut it down. Then you can enter my self-illumined abode, where there is no need of sunlight or electricity. I assure you, when you go there, you will not miss the mortal banyan tree. I want everyone to come to my abode, so I sit in every heart as a super soul, offering guidance. I also write the Vedic literature so that people can understand me. I am that person beyond both the materialist and the enlightened soul. If you know me, you will be wise and everything you do will be perfect. I've told you something.
That's the end of chapter 15. Okay. Anyone quote any of those verses we just summarized? Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto. I'm sitting in everyone's heart. From me come in knowledge, intelligence, remembrance. Good. Okay. What is chapter 15 called, by the way? The Yoga of the Supreme Person, Purushottama Yoga. Okay. So now chapter 16. What is the topic of chapter 16? The divine and demoniac natures.
I have told you something about godly souls. They are honest, pure, self-controlled, and detached. You are such a person, Arjuna. Now listen as I describe the materialistic, atheistic demons. Demons don't know what to do or what not to do. They are unclean, dishonest, and preoccupied with sex. Thinking my creation to be their personal property, they build costly, destructive weapons and feel powerful and proud. Their occasional pretenses of religion or charity are meaningless. For in fact, lust enslaves them. Chained to materialism by greed and anger, they die and are reborn as animals or less. Although the Vedic scriptures could save them from such a fate, Krishna concluded, demons take no interest.
Okay, good. That's the end of chapter 16. Chapter 17. What is the title of chapter 17? The Divisions of Faith.
Arjuna asks, what becomes of religious people who don't refer to the scriptures but make up their own ways of worship? With a look of mock disgust, Krishna shook his head and replied, Religion by imagination is a product of the three modes. The religious pretenders, influenced by goodness, worship the gods, by passion, powerful demons, and by ignorance, ghosts. You see, Arjuna, Krishna went on, the three modes affect everything. Even your food, juicy, fatty, wholesome foods are in goodness. Bitter, salty, pungent foods are in passion, and stale, putrid foods are in ignorance. The modes also influence what kind of charity you give and what kind of discipline you impose on yourself. Still, you should never renounce charity or self-discipline. Puzzled, Arjuna asked, well, then what does it mean for one to be renounced?
Where are we now? It's beginning of chapter 18. Very good. And what is... Yes? Passion. Sorry. That's right. Friday night is passion night, right? So chapter 18 is called what? The perfection of renunciation. Very good. So it begins with Arjuna asking this question. What is renunciation? So this is the real conclusion. Foolish commentators think that chapter 11 is the peak of Bhagavad Gita because there's all this emotional drama. And Arjuna apparently becomes a theist at that point. But that's a really ignorant, superficial analysis of the Gita. It's actually, I mean, people actually write this stuff, you know. So ignorant. One writer called the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita as the greatest anti-climax in world literature. So you can see now at the end of all of his emotional experiences, Arjuna is now asking, okay, what does it mean to be renounced? So this is a conclusion of the Gita. Where are we? Who's got the mic? Please. Smiling again.
Renunciation means detachment from the fruits of your work. One in goodness works dutifully but renounces the result. One in passion renounces work when it grows troublesome. One in ignorance renounces work because he is lazy. Those who work in goodness or Brahmins often become judges, teachers or priests. Kshatriyas, those who work in passion often become administrators, police or soldiers. Passion and ignorance combined produce vaishyas, business people or farmers. And those largely in ignorance are called shudras. They work as artisans, laborers or servants. Regardless of the kind of work that suits you, doing it for me turns it to yoga and enlightens you. For that reason, it's better to do your own kind of work imperfectly than someone else perfectly. Whatever your career inclination may be, you can renounce this world by dedicating your work to me. Then you'll be happy. Krishna paused.
This is a nice part about chapter 18. Krishna keeps getting more and more confident. So he answers the question about renunciation. He says, now I'm going to tell you a little bit more.
Krishna paused, raised an eyebrow and scrutinized Arjuna. Then he said, I'm going to tell you something even more confidential. Serve me and you will learn to act and live in simple wisdom. You will conquer your mind and senses and renounce the fruits of your work. Soon you will enjoy peace and insight as you achieve unprecedented happiness. You will appreciate everyone you meet. In such a state of mind, you will attain my abode. Think about me and stay with me and stay with my devotees. I will clear every obstacle from your path. If you grow proud and imagine you can make it on your own, you will be lost. Glancing around the battlefield, Krishna continued, you are a warrior, Arjuna. It's your nature to fight, and you will fight no matter what. Fight for me, and you will return to your original home in my abode. With a note of detachment, Krishna concluded, now I have told you the secrets of perfection. Arjuna, think over what I have said, and then do as you please.
Okay, let's stop there for a moment. Anyone can quote any of these verses we just read in summary? Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, always think of me, become my devotee, right? Any others? These are big Sarvadhammam Parichaja, surrender everything, abandon all varieties of religion, surrender. See, after explaining all of these details of religion, then Krishna says you just abandon them all and surrender to me. That's 1866, yeah. Sarvadhamma Manmana Baba Manmana, yeah. These are all beautiful, such beautiful verses. So then, this is also a beautiful thing. Like, I grew up in a Bible family, you know, God says or else, you know. That was the whole motivation. You better damn well be good or you're going to go to hell. What, isn't it? Wasn't that more or less theology at 101 as we learned it? Be good or you're going to go to hell. Yeah, be scared. Yeah, she had to go. She was a Catholic. So she had to go to confession and confess her sins, and she hadn't done anything, so she made stuff up. She was afraid not. Okay, Ananda Seva did not have that problem. So the point is that here, rather than being threatening, Krishna is more or less presenting an open-ended conclusion to the book. Please.
Krishna then paused and added softly, "Since I love you so much, I shall summarize. Think about me always, become my devotee, worship me, give me homage, and you will return to me. Give up all other duties, Arjuna, and submit yourself to me. Don't worry, I will free you from the results of any mistakes."
I'm sorry, I was actually referring to this paragraph just above that. Yeah. With a note of detachment, Krishna concluded, "Now I've told you the secrets of perfection, Arjuna. Think over what I've said, and then do as you please." As my friend said, this is his favorite verse in Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Krishna says, "Yate chas." No, sorry, what is it? No, that was another. Is that it? Yeah, today just see Tathakuru. Now do whatever you want. Is your favorite verse also? So Krishna doesn't demand it. He just says, "Okay, I've told you everything. Now you think about it and do what you want. You're totally free." See? Yes. And then. Uh-huh. That's why. We all know that feeling. Good. Okay. So here's a very dramatic, this is the actual dramatic conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Please go ahead. Let's just read this and then we'll be done. Last paragraph, yes. He says, "Do whatever you want. I've told you everything. Do what you please." Now.
Should I continue?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Continue from where I stopped.
Yeah, just Krishna then paused and added softly.
Krishna then paused and added softly, "Since I love you so much, I shall summarize. Think about me always, become my devotee, worship me and give me homage, and you will return to me. Give up all other duties, Arjuna, and submit yourself to me. Don't worry, I'll free you from the results of any past mistakes." Leaning a little closer, Krishna went on, "Please repeat these words of mine, but only to honest people. No one is dearer to me than one who shares this message. And even if someone doesn't believe or understand what you say, just by listening with an open mind, they will rise to heaven and enjoy like a god." Smiling kindly, Krishna asked, "Arjuna, do you understand?" Without hesitating, Arjuna declared, "Yes, infallible Krishna, you have smashed my illusion. By your kindness, I remember who I really am. Yes, now I will fight."
Very good. Thank you. And then, what does the secretary Sanjaya say to conclude Bhagavad Gita? Who knows the last verse? Let's say it together, huh? How does it begin? Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Tata Partha Dinordana Tato Shir Vijayo Bhutir Yuva Nitir Matir Mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the supreme mystic, and wherever there's Arjuna, the supreme what? Archer. There will certainly be victory, opulence, extraordinary power and morality, niti. Dhruva Natira Matira Mama. This is my opinion. And who is he speaking to? Dhritarashtra, yeah, his master. So it's like, boss, I hate to give you the bad news. At the end of that verse, Dhruva Gatir means destination, but I don't think that's Dhruva something Natira Mama Matir means opinion, my thought, right? Dhruva Matir Mama. Dhruva Eti Matir Mama. Yeah, Mati. Actually, in that box right there, if you don't mind. Okay, you see, yeah, this is my opinion. So, it's really bad when your own secretary thinks you're going to lose, you know. And although he's saying it in a positive way, you know, he's not talking about the fate of Dhritarashtra's sons. He's just talking about how incredibly glorious Arjuna and Krishna are. So, yeah. It looks really bad, Dhritarashtra. He doesn't want to say it like that. So, there you have it. Any other comments or questions? Do you find that helpful? Okay, well, we got the overview. Now this afternoon we'll get the literal detail, verse by verse. I believe it's, yeah, that's all there's time for. I'm not sure if they'll do Sanskrit or English. Does anyone know for sure? Always in Sanskrit. Okay, so. You see,